Hi there, this is Alan Tudyk. I'm Wash. And at times I will wash myself just when I get dirty. This is Hypeable Podcast. Talk about Firefly, why don't you?
Welcome, everybody, back to our latest episode of Rewatchable, a podcast brought to you from the team at Hypeable.com, where we are rewatching, or perhaps even watching for the very first time, some shows that have gone off the air but really do merit that infamous rewatch. And maybe these are shows you've always wanted to get into, and now it's your opportunity to get into them with us. The very first show we're featuring on this podcast is Firefly, which is a Josh Sweden show that was canceled way too soon, about 10 years ago. And we are in the dead middle of our rewatch. Today we're going to be featuring episode number 4, which is called Shindig. And just to give you a couple reminders before we get into the episode itself, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can also put a post over on our podcast section on Hypeable.com. That's Hypable.com. Please put a comment over there. We definitely want to hear what you have to say about our take on Firefly. So, as I said, we are going to be covering Shindig today. So just to briefly recap what the episode is about, while pursuing a smuggling job, Mal and Kaylee go undercover at an upper-class ball. Inara is attending the very same ball with her very wealthy client named Atherton Wing. And in an attempt to defend Inara's honor after Atherton makes an offensive comment, Mal punches Atherton in the face, which unfortunately sets a whole bunch of wheels in motion. Mal unknowingly has now started a duel, and the duel is with swords, not with guns. If it was a gun, Mal had an advantage, a sword, not so much. And then, meanwhile, back at the ship, Badger, who has basically a horse in this race, as you could say, is holding the Serenity crew hostage so that things sort of go his way. So that's the brief synopsis of what the episode is about. And I'm Laura, and I'm being joined by Karen, by Kristen, and by Tarek. So before we get into the episode discussion, what was our reaction from our newbies? Is this episode a thumbs up or a thumbs down or sideways for you guys?
I loved this episode so very much just because of the whole, like, Kaylee stuff. Like, I love her so very much. And the whole her wanting to get the big frilly dress and Inara, like, kind of, you know, buddying up to her. And I loved all of that. It was just adorable.
It was a thumb sideways for me. It was I liked it. I don't know why, but it was probably because I was watching it at, like, 12:30 in the morning. but I was entertained. But I wasn't, like, enthralled at all. And I don't know. There's no specific reason as to why I wasn't enthralled. But it wasn't as exciting as some other episodes that I've seen.
Yeah, there isn't a whole lot of action in this one. It's mostly near the end. And everything leading up to that is a lot of, like, the ball and a lot of dialogue and that sort of thing. So I can see why maybe it wasn't as entertaining.
It's funny for me as a classic fan of this. It's not one of my favorite episodes, although it does have one of my very favorite scenes. And the scene that's my favorite one of the favorite scenes of the whole series is where Mal talks to Inara and explains to her why he defended her was because Atherton wasn't even treating her like a human being, and that although he doesn't respect the work that she does, he's never disrespected her as a human being. And to me, that's like one of my favorite scenes in the entire series.
It was very confusing for me as well. Just like the whole ballroom. It was like the weirdest clash of times and costumes and eras. It was so bizarre because it was like old ballroom dancing plus like, but they're in the future plus country. Like, plus sword fighting. It was the weirdest eclectic mix of genres pushed into one scene.
Yeah. Before we get into discussing the show itself, which does have a lot of mixed genres, you're absolutely right, Tarek, in that it totally does. Does anybody have any favorite lines from this one that they want to share? Any kind of quote that just stuck out in your mind? Anybody want to share one?
I absolutely love at the end when after Mal has beat Atherton and he's got, you know, the sword at him and he's walking away, he's finally done, and he goes, "You see how I'm not punching him? I think I won." I just loved it. I was like, that is so Mal. Like, that's great. I love it.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines is from right around that scene, too, when he says, "Mercy is the mark of a great man. Guess I'm just a good one. Well, I'm all right." As he's like poking Atherton with the sword. I love that part.
Yeah, those ones are good. Like I said, for me, it's the moment where Mal says to Inara, and she's like, "You know, you have a funny way talking about honor." You know, she goes, "You call me a whore 1 minute, and then you're defending me when somebody else does the same thing." And Mal then defines the difference to her about saying, "Inara, he didn't respect you. He didn't even see you." That was just so telling of Mal, that he considered Inara on that level, and is that completely aware of how everyone is treating everyone else. And I think it just really speaks to Mal's character that even if he doesn't like what you do, he is going to respect you as a person and has like a certain standard that he feels people need to adhere to. And if he can do something about it, he's going to do something about it. How about favorite scenes? Do you guys have any particular favorite scenes in this one?
Well, I was just going to say one of my favorite quotes for the episode was when they're talking about chipping in for the dress for Kaylee. And Jane is just like, "I'll chip in." And then Joey's just like, "I can hurt you." It was great. But that was also one of my favorite scenes as well, just because I love how innocent Kaylee is. And she's like, "Ooh, dresses."
Yeah, Kaylee gets bamboozled by the pretty. I love that she's just so innocent. She's probably like the most innocent and honest person in the show. I mean, and just, you know, instantaneously says what she thinks and feels and doesn't see any reason not to. Yeah, that's really cool.
Also in that scene, I love Wash's line when he's like, "Captain, can I have money for a slinky dress?" Like, after Zoe's like, "I like mine to be a little slinkier." It was so great. I loved that.
Anybody else have any favorites?
Yeah, my favorite line or my favorite scene is with Kaylee too. And this was a very Kaylee-centric episode. And I think that's why I liked it so much. I'm with you, Kristen. She's just really one of my favorite characters. But I liked the whole part where she was at first getting insulted by those really stuck-up girls. And then the older guy kind of comes in and saves her and makes them sort of storm off. And then it pans back to her later and she's talking to all the guys about all these different ships and stuff, and I just really loved how she didn't have to sacrifice her personality to find some people to talk to at the ball, that she kind of, you know, fell in with the right crowd after all.
Yeah, the scene that I also like too is when Badger and his men are there making sure that, you know, nobody leaves the ship to influence the outcome of this duel in any way, and River comes in and she perfectly mimics Badger's accent. And, you know, she gets the upper hand with Badger as everybody else is like gawking at her like, "Where did this come from?" You know, that's so cool. And a little bit of Firefly history there. They didn't initially intend it to be that way. And they found out quite by accident that Summer Glau was an amazing mimic when it came to duplicating Mark Shepard's accent, which that's actually not Mark Shepard's I mean, it is his accent, but it's a Cockney English accent. Mark Shepard does not speak in a Cockney English accent. He's using a very specific Cockney accent, and Summer Glau is able to perfectly and completely replicate it. And I loved it. And with the timing and the comedy and the tension between the two of them, it's fantastic. I love that. I really adore watching that scene each time, especially the part about, you know, "Let me know if anybody interesting comes." I love that scene. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the episode itself. I think it's really interesting that it starts off with Mal in the bar. And, you know, they're all in the bar and it's the anniversary of, you know, the battles and everything. And Mal decides to, you know, alleviate cash from somebody because he realizes he's dealing in slave trade. And it, you know, kind of shows, you know, Mal being almost like the Robin Hood-y kind of character of robbing for the rich and giving to the poor. What do you guys think about Mal doing this? Do you think it's that he really likes standing up for the little guy, or he likes playing the hero more? What do you think it is that motivates Mal to constantly put himself in these kind of situations?
I kind of think that he likes to be able to be looked at as the hero who kind of saves the day, but in the same way, he wants to be able to still call himself a thief and still be able to play the bad guy card too. So by taking money from this, you know, slave trader jerk, he can kind of play both sides at the same time. And I think that's what he likes so much.
Yeah, he's such a contradiction. You know, he's like a good bad guy. And it's so strange how he sort of toes that line where you know that he's a thief, but at the same time, you know, he's dependable and loyal, and he's actually a decent human being. He's not like Badger, you know, who will pretty much sell his own grandmother to get what he wants. And I just always really think it's so interesting how they play that, you know, how they show that he's a good guy, but at the same time, he's still kind of a bad guy.
How about, like, and it's funny, because you look at that, and Mal's a guy who's, you know, he's kind of savvy. He's been his way around the world. He, you know, he knows how things go down. And I think if you want to talk about somebody being savvy on that same kind of level, you have somebody like Inara, who clearly has a lot of experience in the world, granted of a different type than Mal. Mal, who's a lot of his experience is battle, but it's still, it's judging people and judging their characters and figuring out how you get what you want from a person, which is not unlike what Inara does for a living as a companion, if you stop to think about it for a minute. And she's kind of a puzzle, you know, where, you know, you have the companions that, somebody as bright as Inara, you feel like she could choose to be whatever she wanted to be, but she's a companion. And at the same time, it's a paradox. The companions are treated with respect, but they're also treated as like goods or devalued. And we've seen that a couple of times with the clients, how they do look down on the companion, even though they're so high-end and so classy and all that. I do have a question, though, because this does kind of bug me. Atherton, you know, she's going through her screen of all different people she could see, and she picks Atherton, who Mal alludes to the fact that he's a regular, and Atherton also tells her, you know, you haven't gotten back to me about this offer, so apparently he's made her this offer previously to be, like, his exclusive, like, on-world, on-site companion, and it makes me wonder, for somebody who's as savvy as Inara, what did she see in Atherton? Because I feel like it's pretty obvious from the get-go that he's a jerk and he's obnoxious and he's cruel. Do you guys have any opinions as to why Inara had not seen that side of him until the ball?
I'm actually really bamboozled by the fact that, like, she hasn't seen that side, just because when she was looking at, like, the videos of, like, I guess, like, the people who were sending in their selves for, like, her option, and like when she clicked on the first one, and the first one's like this kid basically who's just kind of like adorable, and I thought she was gonna pick him because he seemed really sincere and like kind of like the shy man who just wanted a companion, and I feel like she was gonna go that route, and then they go ahead and they show you essentially the complete opposite of that character, and they show this guy in this video who just looked like a douche just on the video screen. And I'm just like, oh, this guy just looks like a preppy rich boy. And I'm like, I don't understand why they would have also given you the view of those two completely different characters and kind of given the viewers that obvious glimpse into what this character is and then why she would have chosen him. Like, I don't understand why she chose him at all. But yeah. I feel like it was very interesting that they had a complete opposite character in the same scene to give you that kind of go around.
Yeah, and she's met him before. It's not like, you know, I could see maybe going for the suave guy and then you go out with him once and you're like, oh, okay. Like you said, he's a real douche. Like, so It's like he's a regular. What the hell, Inara? What do you see in this guy? Anybody else want to chime in?
The only thing I could really come up with, because I kind of had the same thought process. It was like, she's been with this guy before. There's no way he's hidden this from her. Like, he acts like a douche a lot of the time. So I don't understand how she wouldn't have gotten that from him in the past. The only thing I could come up with is that he has the grandiose lifestyle. Everything is above and beyond, you know, like he's the really, really rich guy. And I'm sure a lot of her other regulars are probably the same way, but maybe there's something about his world that she likes to check in on from time to time, like this ball. And because of that, she puts up with him. And then this time it just kind of took one step further than it's ever gone before. That's kind of what I wondered. Maybe that was why.
You are right that there is something to be said for that. I mean, she is obviously on the Serenity shuttle, which obviously is not high living. She left like the main like base of the companions in the, you know, in the inner circle and in the Alliance area. You know, she left their gorgeous city to go out and explore with Serenity, and now she's dealing with all kinds of people on the outer planets. And, you know, this is the only shot she has at something that is more high end and more high class. And, you know, she just was just at the bar with Mal, and, you know, it ends in a bar fight, you know, and she has to hightail it out of there. So yeah, I mean, maybe part of the attraction is that the money in the class is something she doesn't see all the time, so it is still alluring. But it does. It really does make you wonder why she's finding that so attractive. So things to keep in mind. Maybe there'll be, maybe there might be a reason. When we get done watching the whole series, I'll let go some secrets, because I think there may be a motivating factor here, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody who doesn't know, and we're all still rewatching. So somebody remind me, because I have a thought as to what it could be, but I don't want to spoil it in the middle of the rewatch.
Something else that just kind of jumps out at me here is the fact that she, when she was talking to Mal, she says, you know, he likes me. And I know that you don't see it like that, but I kind of wonder if she mistakes his interest in her as an interest in her as a person and not a companion. And maybe that's something that she doesn't see all the time. And that's why she sort of stuck it out with him for a while. And I don't know. I mean, obviously he is kind of douchey, but I'm wondering if, like you guys said, this is sort of the first time that we really see him acting like that. And it's because Mal intimidates him. You can see that by the way he grabs Inara's arm, and he's very protective and jealous of her. Maybe he hasn't come up against that before, so he hasn't acted that way previously. And so maybe, you know, she just hadn't seen that side of him before.
Yeah, could be. That is a possibility. Maybe onto something there. Aside from people, like we're saying, you know, this, you know, Atherton is not, you know, the world's most lovely, suave guy. We also have Mal, who at times can be kind of a jerk. And after he's kind of mean with Kaylee, he goes out and buys him the dress, or her the dress to, you know, so because he needs a date to go to the ball. So he takes Kaylee with him. But here's a question. Do you think he really totally needed a date for that ball? Or do you think he kind of felt bad, like the big brother who maybe teased her too badly? You know, do you think that was his way of making amends to Kaylee that she could go to the ball? What do you think?
I definitely think so, because he could have taken Zoe. Zoe's usually, you know, his right-hand man. And I think if something would have gone down, it would have been better to have Zoe on his side than Kaylee. No offense to her, but I mean, Zoe's a warrior woman. So I think it was definitely his way of apologizing.
I also love Kaylee, because, like, as you guys were saying before, she is so sweet and innocent. You know, she loves the big poofy, like, frou-frou dress, because it seems obvious that she does not, I mean, she's kind of a tomboy. I mean, if you look at how she's dressed the entire time on Serenity, she is dressed like a tomboy. And obviously a lot of that comes because she's the engine mechanic, and you're not going to be wearing a dress inside the engine room and all that. But this was cool in that we got to see that Kaylee really does like pretty things, and she does have a feminine side. I mean, we've seen little glimpses of it, like the really cool little parasol that she had that time, and Kaylee's quarters are, you know, have some little lanterns in them. They're much more feminine than what we usually see from Kaylee. So I thought it was kind of really cool to see her getting this, you know, really cool dress. And for her, I mean, it was just like the little kid, you know, in the candy store the first time with the big eyes looking at everything. And I don't know, did you guys like feel really bad for Kaylee? Because she is like, to me, I feel like she is the most honest and innocent person on that ship. Like, to me, the only person she can't be 100% honest with is Simon, because she likes him. But other than that, like, she's honest with everyone, and she just gets her feelings like totally trounced on by those girls. Like, what did you think about that?
I love Kaylee, and so I was loving all of the Kaylee-ness that we got this episode. When it came down to the girls, the thing that stuck out to me was that it wasn't somebody else from the ship that saw what they were doing and came to rescue her. It was a stranger. And this stranger just steps in and is like, I'm going to help this little girl because, you know, she obviously doesn't deserve this. Like, it's not just the crew that sees Kaylee for who she is and likes her for that. It's other people who just see how sweet and kind she is. Like, I loved that.
Here's a question I have for you guys, because this will come up in an episode later on. How innocent, I mean, given Kaylee's, like I said, she wears her heart on her sleeve. She says what she thinks. She wants the big frou-frou-y dress that's not like the slinky one. Like, Zoe's the one saying, if I'm going to buy a dress, I'm going to buy one that has a little slink to it, you know, and then Wash is like, hey, Captain, can my woman have a slinky dress? We got money for this. But so she wears the more kind of innocent-looking, poofy, frilly dress. She seems to be more, you know, sweet and innocent. So here's my question for you guys who are newbies to the podcast, or newbies to the show, I should say. How innocent do you think Kaylee is when it comes to dealing with people of the opposite sex?
That's a really good question. That's kind of disturbing to think about, too, because I just think of Kaylee as a child. So I want to say she's really innocent for some reason, just because of the way she acts around, well, just Simon. I feel like she's really, really innocent. And I feel like Simon is one of the first times that she's had a crush on someone, just because she's not, it's very easy to get her to blush when someone talks about Simon. So that's my reasoning.
I'd have to say I agree. I don't feel like she's super experienced or anything. She seems to be really just sweet and innocent, and more so because of her demeanor. Like, she's kind of the, as we've said before, she's the tomboy, and she gets along with all the guys, but she's never trying to like put herself out there. She's not flirting with them all the time. It doesn't seem to be her like instinct is to like flirt around and, you know, be the girly girl. So it kind of makes me think she's a little more innocent, but I, you know, who knows?
I know for me, the first time I watched this, I remember thinking like she might as well have the word virgin like stamped across her forehead, because she just comes off so completely innocent, inexperienced. I mean, like, about anything. And it will be interesting to see in a later episode how much of that is true or untrue and how that plays out or doesn't. So food for thought here for our folks that are watching this through. Keep that in the back of your mind. Our other characters are not right involved in the you know, the interaction in the town. They're back on the ship. And it's funny, I think sort of juxtaposed to Kaylee being the innocent, we also have River the innocent, who they're basically kind of tears apart their whole cabin and everything there. And we have her there with Shepherd and Simon and Wash and Zoe, and they're all back. What do you guys think of the dynamic on how it's starting to work out now with River and Simon being accepted by the people on the crew or not? How do you guys feel about the dynamic that's starting to come up?
I feel like everyone is starting to like just accept River and Simon as like part of the crew and like part of like the quote unquote like family, except Jane. And I feel like Jane just needs to get the stick out of his ass and just accept and stop being a prick to River for being so different and having these issues that she can't control. And I feel like I just want to see River kick Jane's ass. I feel like that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. That could be very cool. How about you guys? What do you think about the dynamic here with the Tams and the rest of the crew? How that's going along?
You know, aside from the fact that it is obvious that the crew is accepting them as a part of the family. It's also interesting to see that they're accepting that they're a part of the family, because Shepard, when he's playing the game with Jane and Simon, it's very a friendly back and forth. They're very comfortable with each other. And even Simon, who has to take care of his sister and is more on the outskirts, I think, than Shepard is. And of course, you know, River's even farther out than Simon is. It's just interesting to see how comfortable and how accepting of this lifestyle they're all becoming, considering that Simon came from a very, very wealthy family, and Shepard is obviously, you know, from an abbey, and obviously we don't know everything about him, but they seem to be pretty comfortable settling in on board Serenity.
It's interesting because Shepard is like gambling for cheers, you know, and he is the Shepard. Do you think that's Serenity changing him, or do you think that's maybe a little piece of his past history coming out, or is it just all good fun?
This is definitely something that struck me as really odd, I guess. I don't remember really picking up on it the first couple of times, but, you know, watching a little bit closely for the podcast, I saw it and I was like, wait, are they really supposed to be doing that? And it's interesting to see that I think life on Serenity is changing all of them, Simon and the Shepherd particularly, like I said, because they come from all these different places and yet they're settling in very well on board the ship. But I also do think that it's telling of who Shepherd was beforehand, that maybe, you know, because they said before in a previous episode that, you know, how does he know how to do all this stuff? How does he know how to fight? And how does he know all that he knows? And so I think that there's definitely more going on, and part of this probably does play into that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I agree. When I looked at it, I feel like it's more of his character, and he's so willing to fit in. Like, I feel like for Shepard, like, Serenity is kind of providing him with just that word, Serenity, as it is Simon and River, that it's providing him a calmness, a life, and he just wants to be a part of it. And he'll do what he can to, like, fit in. Like, he's looking to be a part of everything. So I feel like that's incredibly important. Like, he wants to join in. You know, Simon and River initially have no choice. They just didn't want to get thrown off or killed. But now they want to be a part and fit in. And I think that's really, like, key to their characters, that they want to they will relax with each other and have each other's backs, which I think is really, really cool. Which I guess sort of brings me to the point of Jane. If nobody trusts Jane, why do you think they keep him around? I mean, this episode too, like, people are not, you know, entire. I mean, Jane is not, like I said, he's certainly not the sharpest tool in the shed. I mean, he's the muscle, but what do you think the advantages or disadvantages of keeping Jane around are? Especially our newbies.
Well, as far as, like, I kind of assume that Jane and Mal are, as close as Jane can get to anyone, I think he is to Mal. Just because the only person we really see him interact with is Mal. And so, since he's a part of the crew, and Mal seems to want to, you know, protect his crew a little, I mean, for the most part, I kind of feel like that's why he's still around, and that's why, you know, they keep him around, is because, well, he's part of the crew and Mal trusts him, so we'll trust him.
Yeah, I feel like there's just some sort of backstory to how Mal and Jane know each other and how they're connected and how they, like, how what you said, Kristen, like, how they trust each other. And I feel like that's the only reason he's around, is because I feel like Mal knows Jane, and Mal's probably the only one who knows that Jane is for sure, like, a good person, theoretically. But I feel like they can't just be like, hey, Mal, kick Jane off. He's just being a prick, because he's really helpful. And so, like, he's the one who jumped off of the ship onto a moving train to get the cargo. So I feel like no one else would have been able to do that quite as well.
Yeah, do you feel like Mal is the only one who really controls Jane at this point? Like, if it wasn't, like, and I mean, obviously somebody, like, I think Zoe could subdue him if she had to. Or she could attempt to control him, but do you feel like Mal is the only one who totally controls Jane?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I kind of think, this is kind of bad, I kind of think of Jane as Snape to Mal's Dumbledore.
Like, oh, that's
nice.
Cool.
Like, you, none of us can really trust Jane, but Mal trusts Jane. And so therefore we're all like, well, if he does, then I guess, you know, we'll keep him around. That's kind of how I think of him.
Interesting. Cool comparison. Really interesting. Okay. So do you guys want to explain this TARDIS thing? Because I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Go ahead, Tarek.
That was my little thing. I'm sorry. I deleted it, but I just, okay. So when they entered the ballroom, the very first thing when they mentioned the chandelier and how it was rotating, the first thing I thought of was, that looks exactly like how the new TARDIS hub looks like in the center with the moving rims and the like designs. And I'm just like, I feel like Doctor Who got their inspiration from Firefly. And I'm like wondering if anyone else listening to the podcast noticed the resemblance between the chandelier and the rotating TARDIS hub.
It's funny because when I first read that, I was like, what is he talking about? He's crazy. But then I was watching Doctor Who today and it had this like close up on the TARDIS center. And I was like, oh my God, they do look exactly alike.
I haven't watched today's Who yet. So as soon as I do, I'm going to see it and be like, oh my gosh, I'm sure. So I didn't recognize it, but I can totally believe it. So
I feel like any like true like nerd who loves Firefly and Doctor Who must have seen this and just been like, oh, or I'm just too much of a geek and I'm the only one who went, oh.
10 years later, we have a crossover. Gotta love it. Okay, why don't we move into one of the really central parts of this episode, which, I mean, obviously, the whole point of Firefly is that they're smugglers and they're smuggling cargo, and how do they work that out in any given episode? But at the end of the day here, in the midst of trying to work out this smuggling arrangement, Mal comes across Inara with Atherton, and he instantaneously takes a dislike to Atherton. You can see Atherton being very possessive of Inara. He grabs her arm like more tightly than he should. Mal takes notice of that immediately. And then Mal kind of outplays him with words, making, you know, Atherton feel belittled by Mal and his words. And Mal asks the dance. And then eventually it comes over and it ends all in Mal unwittingly starting a sword fight. What do you think of this, of Mal and the whole idea of him now wanting to defend Inara's honor, and very much how Inara says, like, what's up with this? Do you buy Mal's excuse that the reason he felt compelled to do it was because the guy did not respect Inara as a person and did not really see her as a human being? Or do you think that's just an excuse, that there's more to it than that?
I definitely think that's the reason why. I think it's really interesting how he defends Inara's honor as a person and not, you know, the honor of her job, because obviously he doesn't think that there is much honor in that. But it sort of makes me wonder if that's why he hates the business so much, because he thinks Inara is such a better person than that, and he just can't really understand why she would mix herself up in that sort of company.
Do you guys think that Mal has romantic interest in Inara, or vice versa at this point?
I definitely think that there's something going on. Like, I don't know if either one of them really thinks of it that way, but there's definitely some tension in their scenes that does not go unnoticed.
Oh, I totally ship it. Obviously, yes.
As the creator of Battleships, I would be very disappointed if you didn't, Tarek.
Oh, clearly. I also ship me and Simon, so let's not get into that.
So who do you think has the feelings more strongly for the other person? I don't know that I can figure that out at this point, but who do you guys feel, you know, is more strongly attracted to the other person? I mean, I think they're both in denial. There's no way to say that they're both not in denial. Who do you think has the stronger feelings at this point? And who do you think does a better job at covering up their feelings?
I'd have to say, I think Mal has the stronger feelings for Inara, and he buries it with this constant snarking about her job and, you know, what he wishes that, you know, she didn't have this job. I think that's more of a defensive mechanism for him, because he can hide behind it more than her trying to hide behind the fact that he's a thief. I think his feelings are a little stronger than hers.
I definitely think that Mal's feelings for Inara are way stronger. However, I feel like Inara does have feelings for Mal, but she's better at hiding it. And so I feel like there's totally a connection there. And if there isn't, I swear I'm just going to slap myself.
Yeah, I agree. I think completely what you said, Tarek. I think Inara is so much better than Mal at hiding her feelings for him in front of him when he's watching. She's way better at it. I think he lets it slip much more easily than she does. Although I would say the common denominator on their true feelings being known is when it's life and death. Because when you think back to the first episode, the first glimmer you had of Mal and Inara feeling something for each other was when the Reavers might be boarding the ship and Mal tells Inara to get people in her shuttle and get off. And she's like, you can't, you know, no, like, come with me. Like, you can kind of see the facade dropping there and it's a life or death situation. And then I felt like it was the same thing this episode when Inara truly believes that Atherton is going to kill Mal. And she's like, no, 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 take me. And I think she would have probably offered, you know, if it was, you know, Shepard or Simon or another guy in that position, I think she would try to have argued a way out for that person. But I think she does it much more passionately here because it's Mal. So I don't know. That's my two cents in any case. What do you think about the end of the fight where Mal decides to let him go? What do you think that, you know, you talked about the honor and everything there. What do you think about that when Mal decides just to leave him humiliated instead?
I totally saw it coming. Like, the second they said something about having to kill off the other person completely, like, I was just like, oh, Mal's not going to do it. They're going to do, like, the whole high ground thing where he's going to be like, oh, you're going to live and let me help you up. Okay, I'm going to punch you back down and then walk away. But that didn't happen in that order, but it still kind of happened.
The thing is, like, Mal's not opposed to killing people. We've seen it before when he blew away the lawman, you know? I mean, he just walked in the ship and killed him right then and there. So I think for him, he knew how much worse it was that Atherton was beaten and had to live with that, and that he was that humiliated in front of his peers. And I think that was more of a victory for him than killing him would have been.
Right. There's also a certain personal level of threat, realistically speaking. What is Atherton going to do to Mal versus the agent from, you know, the government? So, yeah, I think that definitely plays into it, too. I think it also earns Mal respect with the guy who's, you know, he's going to be smuggling the cattle for. I mean, it certainly does earn him like a certain it just keeps upping his street cred with that guy. So I think it definitely did have an advantage for Mal as far as that goes too. How about that cargo there that they're towing? Did you guys think it was going to be cattle? Like, what did you guys think was going to be smuggled off? Because I know I never in a million years thought it was going to be cows, and it's kind of funny that it's cows.
Well, at the end, when him and when Mal and Inara are sitting and you see the cows for the first time, I didn't put it together. I was like, why are there cows on the ship? What is going on? And then, like, it clicked, and I was like, oh, that's what he was unloading. Like, that's what he was trying to get rid of. Like, it just cracked me up. I was like, of course it's cows. Like, what else is it? Like, it just seemed completely random, but, like, totally fits with everything else we've seen so far.
I just loved it. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, guns. It was going to be, I mean, no, it's cows, but it makes sense because this is the world where, you know, they don't have fresh food and they have all these, like, intense protein bars and all this, like, crappy kind of food. And obviously, smuggling an entire herd of cattle would bring huge money. It's fresh meat. So I remember just laughing, like, not thinking it was cows. I loved that it was cows. At the very end, Inara tells Mal that she wouldn't really have left Serenity. Do we believe her? Do we not believe her? What do you think?
I feel like she totally would have left Serenity if the guy wasn't just a complete and utter douche. I feel like if it was like a nice gentleman who lifted her off her feet or swept her off her feet, then she totally would have left, in my opinion, just because I feel like she's looking for a reason to kind of stay, and she likes that whole scene, like the upper class type of thing. And so I feel like the only factor that made her stay was the fact that Mal defended her honor, plus the fact that the person he was punching was just a complete ass.
I have to say that I feel like if it really would have been Mal's life or her joining Atherton as his personal companion, she would have stayed. Like, if Mal wouldn't have turned that situation around and beaten Atherton at his own game, she would have stayed behind. But because things worked out in her favor, she can tell Mal she never would have left.
Here's a question. Obviously, because I agree too. I feel like she, if it was to protect Mal, my personal opinion is that she absolutely would have done it for Mal. Do you guys feel like she would have done that for anybody else on that ship? Is there a relationship that, like I said, I think she buries those feelings for Mal very, very deeply. Do you think there's anybody else on the ship she would have made that kind of sacrifice for?
Kaylee, I think.
Kaylee, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only person I can think of.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. I feel like the only person that she feels as deeply for Mal is Kaylee, in a platonic way. Like, I don't feel like there is a romantic attraction between her and Kaylee, but I feel like she feels for Kaylee on as deep a level as she does for Mal, and I think you see that come out at various points.
All right, so we're going to get into our feedback section now, and this one is from Hannah, and she says, "Dear lovely hosts, I have not been able to listen to the commentary piece just yet. My school days leave me with empty nights, and I don't really feel like watching the episode in the dark," which is totally understandable. And she says, "alone, even if my room is locked, I don't have a weapon to defend myself nor a TARDIS to escape in." And then she says, "of course, when one's on a ship, the passengers gamble with chores. How very much a family thing to do, even with Jane stealing some of the pot from Book. Can we start thinking of the Firefly crew as a family yet? Where do you find each character in the family tree?" This is a really good question, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but I think there's definitely the core family where, you know, the originals sort of are, like Mal and Zoe and Wash and those. But I definitely think Book, Simon, and River are quickly becoming a part of the family. And we see this a lot more in the next episode, too, titled Safe, where they defend each other and they go rescue each other. And it's sort of becoming a more solidified thing. So, yeah, I definitely think that they're becoming part of the family.
Definitely can see, like, Mal and Inara kind of taking, like, the father and mother role. And they do that rather well. I mean, Mal is willing to discipline or, you know, yell and scream at whoever he needs to. And Inara is really good with, like, helping people through things and, like, you know, talking to them when stuff happens. So I can definitely see them as, like, the heads of it. And then everybody underneath is just, like, the brothers and sisters that all bicker and, you know, and get along and bicker and get along. It's just, you know, I love that whole dynamic. But yeah, it's totally a family.
Wash is totally like the crazy cool uncle.
Yeah, I totally Wash, agree, yeah.
I would feel like Wash is the cool uncle. And because I don't like Book at all, he's like the annoying uncle trying to force good things down everyone's throats.
So do you think, like Selena, that he's evil?
Yes, I hate him. I don't like him at all.
Oh my gosh, I don't think Book is evil. I think he's like the grandfather. To me, he's like the grandfather. Like, he's the moral, he's like the moral compass.
He's like the annoying moral compass, though. He's just like, I feel like the way he talks and the way he's just shoving his good beliefs down everyone's throats, in my opinion, and I don't like it. And I have to say, in the next episode, I'm very happy just leaving that out there.
Oh, you're so mean.
We also got some feedback from Bianca. She says, "Hi, great commentary on the last show. It was a different but equally effective way to review the episode. My particular favorite moments were the 'River is a Horcrux' and the 'Wow, look at those guns' bits. I really like River's confrontation with Badger. Summer Glau actually worked with Mark Shepard to get the accent right. Just a little fact, but Adam Baldwin always wanted Jane to end up with Inara because he thought that she would never be there in the morning. Perfect for Jane." I have to say that is definitely hilarious because that seems to fit right in with Jane's personality. Like, he would love to have some girl who would just be gone in the morning and he never had to worry about.
Oh my gosh, but Inara would never go for that in a million years.
Oh, no.
Agreed.
I think Inara has like a minimum level of intelligence that she, you know, agrees to sleep with. And I just, you know, Jane just, you know, he's just, yeah, he's just missing just several levels of it. And yeah, there's no way. He's not even well-meaning. Like, even if the person wasn't the most intelligent in the world, if they were nice, maybe Inara would go with him. He's not, he just has too much against him. No, he would just so not. She would never go with Jane. So thank you, everybody, for watching episode number 104, Shindig of Firefly, with us. I know we really enjoyed rewatching it. Hopefully you did, too, or perhaps even watching it for the first time. Again, as a reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, please do get in touch with us by sending us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can also put a comment over on hypable.com, over in our podcast section, and we'd be happy to hear what you have to say about this episode or any of our upcoming episodes. Thank you so much for listening. Until the next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Tarek.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
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 Bye.